Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat.
They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague in the morning on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan and The Fan Radio Network. Also on YouTube. You can watch on YouTube. I think some listeners saying that I would make a great chick.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Take their word for it.
They said G-E-E-A-T chick. I don't know.
Is that what we're trying to say?
I don't know. I asked them. They never responded. Thank you.
Look, we're a Big Ten here. Whatever, you know.
Pretty. Is that what you're saying? Like, thank you.
You're looking good over there, man.
Get it from my mama.
You were hiding in the background of my news hit yesterday, creeping into the background of the shot, walking into that bad boy.
I wanted nothing to do with it.
Hello.
Nothing to do with that interview.
I love that there's probably some random ass people watching that at home at 4 whatever time on K, watching K2, the local news.
Yeah.
Here's some radio station interview, and then what's this guy doing in the background?
It is day two on the FM dial.
Yes, it is.
Feels great. Still doesn't feel real to me.
No, we're exploring the space.
We are exploring the space.
We got an extra hour. We'll see how it goes.
It's great to be here. We have a lot of college football we're going to get into. If you miss any of the hours of the radio program, of course, you can always catch it at 1051thefan.com. That is the website, right?
Yeah, definitely is. Without a doubt.
Yeah, well, you can find it at our website, and you can replay it on YouTube, any shows that you missed.
It is 1051 if you go to 1051thefan.com.
I was testing you. And the Odyssey app is how you can stream the show, which is also turned over. And the cool part about the Odyssey app, it has what they call chapters. And so you can just see, like, let's say specifically you didn't have time to catch the whole show, but you really want to get Dirt's duck takes.
Yes, you got to get my duck takes in.
And there it'll be labeled Dirt's duck takes. And you can just click that and you can catch the 11 to 15 minute segment that we do.
We should label them that way in the app every day. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I think we should.
Dirt's duck takes.
Yes.
Duck tails for duck takes.
And then when we talk Oregon State, Brandon Beaver.
Brandon the Beaver. Hey, do you know one of us is a duck and one of us is a beaver?
I hadn't heard that in my life.
We got to let the new audience know. We represent both schools here.
Although both of us get called like anti-duck and anti-beaver.
That was the funniest thing when we tweeted something out about the FM move. Somebody, some jabroni responded and said, why would I listen to that show? They only pump up the ducks and they hate on every other local school.
Really?
Or every other local team. So basically tying my negative Blazer takes into you, which some you agree with and some you disagree with. And one of our other listeners jumped in there and said, you realize Sprague went to Oregon State, right?
It's never good enough.
You're a duck honk. Stop being a duck honk over there.
If I don't have Oregon State 11-1, I hate Oregon State.
Are they going undefeated this year?
No.
You bastard.
No.
Taking away your fan card.
Terrified of the start of their season, actually, with that.
Get a win in game one, you know? Let's start off right out of the
schedule's
game.
Schedule's not great. A lot to get to in the second hour of the program. Poll question is up, and I asked it before the break. Is a 6-3 conference record in your mind considered great? Yes or no, at Dirt and Sprague on the social media. What would you say?
I mean, without having any extra context behind it, I would say that's not great. Great is not the word that I would use to describe that.
Really?
Fine, good, passable, decent. Now, the context would be, what conference are you in? Who did you play? Who were the 6 wins against? Who were the 3 losses against? And what were the outcomes of those games in terms of this final score and how you played?
I find that an interesting answer.
Okay.
Why do we need context? 6-3 conference record is kind of a 6-3 conference record. Is it great or is it not great?
Is Florida's conference schedule last year the same as Indiana's conference schedule from last year? Would Indiana being 6-3 be the same as, I know SEC doesn't play 9 conference games, but you get my point.
Yeah.
Was that the same? If they lost by 1 score to Texas, 1 score to Georgia, and a late last-second field goal to LSU, but they beat Alabama, and they beat Oklahoma, and they beat somebody else. Is that the same as getting killed by Ohio State?
But I feel like this is a new evolving opinion for college football junkies because the playoff is expanded, right? We're putting more teams into it. I don't know if there's ever in a point of our lives, if we're just being honest as sports fans, where we would have said 6-3 is a great conference record.
I usually would not say that. No, in 99% of the cases.
Here is Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten. Big Ten Media Day kicked off. Dan Lanning is today. Be able to catch that live here on The Fan, the home of the Oregon Ducks, on Harrison Meringue between 10 and 1. He'll be on the podium around noon is our guess. Here is Tony Petitti on that same thing.
Last year, Ohio State was 7-2 and finished fourth in the Big Ten, right? Was undefeated in non-conference play. So, you know, the idea that we can go deep, I feel pretty strongly about that. If you're 6-3 in the Big Ten, I would argue that's a great record. And if you stumbled in a non-conference game, I don't know why that disqualifies you. 8-4 is a winning percentage. If you project that winning percentage in every other sport, I'm pretty sure you make the postseason. Whether it's hockey, basketball, anywhere else, like that type of winning record. So we've conditioned ourselves to think that if you're not a one or two loss team, you're not worthy of competing. There are plenty of teams in professional sports who qualify for the playoffs who can't get past the first round game. That's okay. They still get to play. Like, you know, we'll figure it out on the field rather than sitting in a room.
It's so deep. It's so long.
Interesting. Pro Sports says this is a good record, so yes. It's a good record.
There is actually
pro sports, huh?
The funniest thing about this was did you see the Big 12's tweet to this yesterday?
I missed the Big 12's tweet.
So the Big 12 saw this quote and then decided, you know what? Every conference is fighting with every conference right now, so why don't we jump into the mix and dunk on somebody?
They all seem to hate each other.
And they used Iowa as the example because Iowa, I don't know if you know this, was 6-3 in conference play last year. 6-3 in the Big Ten.
Okay.
He mentioned you could stumble out of conference. Who did Iowa play? And there's their in-state rival that's in the Big 12. Iowa State. Iowa State beat them at Iowa, so they went on the road and beat them, so they stumbled out of conference. Their Big Ten wins last year, Iowa's, Minnesota, Washington, Northwestern, Wisconsin, who was terrible, Maryland, and Nebraska, 13-10. Those were their six conference wins. They got smoked by Ohio State, the only elite team that they played all year, lost to Michigan State somehow on the road, and then lost on the road to UCLA. That was 6-3 in the Big Ten with the stumble. That was literally Iowa last year.
It's just, we're kind of at a point where the camps haven't opened.
Yeah.
So the media days are providing us, you know, fun quotes and takeaways. Right now, that sport is every conference hates each other.
Yes.
Now, there's hierarchy of who we hate the most, and it goes down from there. The SEC is the conference that everybody is saying, nah, screw you guys.
We'll take shots at you, but then we're going to take shots at each other, too.
Yeah. So I don't know. I find all of it just posturing, getting teams in. Fourth place, by the way. That's not, you know, it's not terrible. It's a tough conference.
Yeah.
And Ohio State won the national championship, so you give them their flowers. But his point on 6-3 being great when the fourth place team was 7-2, I just, you know, I get it. You're the commissioner of the conference. We understand it. Look, I'm not saying it's not a good record.
It's fine. It's a passable record.
Totally
I would never use the word great. That's not a word that would come to my vocabulary.
I tend to agree with that. We do have conference teaming up to take down a conference.
We do.
Which is great.
We have a tag team match in college football right now.
Let's start in the ACC because most people don't know this. The ACC Media Days is happening.
Yeah, I didn't. That dawned on me. We're focused on Big Ten Media Day because they're going on, and I saw quotes coming out, and I'm like, why is Carson back on a desk right now? Oh, that's right. The ACC's doing it this week, too.
Here's Rhett Lashley, the head coach of SMU, and just, you know, hey, the SEC, they really like to tout themselves. Maybe we're better.
It's just a week in, week out. That's the league you want to be in. That's where you want to be. I mean, you look at our league. We had like 4 10-win teams, 2 playoff teams, a handful of 9-win teams, 13 bowl teams. I mean, there's just not a lot of easy wins on the schedule. And there's other leagues that claim depth. But like, the SEC's had the same 6 schools win the championship since 1964. Same 6. Not a single one has been different since 1964. It's top heavy to me.
That didn't sit well with SEC fans.
Well, look, he's not wrong. It's a top heavy conference. There's 6 teams that have won a national championship. What has the ACC been for the last 15 years? Clemson?
Yeah.
Florida State? Who else?
Well, but.
Oh, wait.
Okay, but his point is depth.
Does the ACC have great depth?
Better than the SEC.
Is the ACC, Boston College good?
I'm just
Cal good?
Dude, I don't know. I didn't say the quote.
Is North Carolina good?
His quote is
Pitt good? Stanford good?
Okay, his quote is not about who wins the national championship, yeah. Which is what you're pointing out.
Sure.
His point is the overall depth of the conference.
And I don't think the ACC has great depth.
His
I don't
mind
think it's
is
great.
Better.
This is a strong disagreement.
Well,
for
I
me.
Think part
I
of
love that people are taking shots at the SEC. I'm all for that. It's funny. Let's point at them and laugh. But, like, dude, you're in the ACC. The ACC has been propped up by literally two teams for the last 15 years, Florida State with Jimbo Fisher and Dabo and Clemson. That's it. By the way, your conference champion in Clemson last year, do you realize they played three SEC teams?
Yep.
What was their record against the SEC teams?
Oh and three. Yeah.
Including losing to the eighth place team in the SEC home.
I would actually add a third team into this for the ACC.
Sure, who you got?
The idea of Miami being back.
The idea of Miami being back. Florida State with Jimbo Fisher 10 years ago and Dabo Sweeney. That's what props up the ACC.
The one thing I would say,
all of
though,
these conferences are top heavy, man. They all are.
Yes.
What's the Big Ten? The bottom of the Big Ten's garbage.
Right.
You got Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon, and we'll see if USC, Washington, Wisconsin, some of these other schools can climb up to it, but they're all top heavy.
The one thing I do like, though, and I tend to agree with Lashley here, because your point is valid. I don't look at the ACC from top to bottom and go, oh, man, that conference.
That gauntlet. How are you going to get through Stanford this week? And then you got to go on the road to Virginia next week? Oh, my God.
I saw Justin Wilcox at the podium yesterday, and I kind of just got sad. I'm like, dude, we're interviewing this guy in L.A., Pac-12 Media Day, and now he has to deal with all this crap. The one thing I would counter, though, isn't that Lashley's right. It is that I do think that conference, the SEC, they do get a bit of an edge.
For sure they do.
In the, when one of those six, whoever those six are, the LSUs, the Alabama, when they lose, it tends to be like last year we saw bad or mediocre Vanderbilt beat Alabama. That, I think, helps the narrative that the conference is deeper because you occasionally get one of the six stubbing their toe.
Yeah, you and respect Alabama so much and they lose and you're like, damn, Vanderbilt must be pretty good this year.
Right, I think that's a lot of what it is. Now, let's go to this. Kurt Cignetti in the Big Ten at Indiana smoking some cigarettes.
He was smoking them cigs yesterday, man.
He was asked about canceling non-conference games against good teams.
They were supposed to play Virginia to start the year. That was their opening game, speaking of the ACC, and they bought out of it to schedule a Baylor School for the Blind.
They have nothing but like Kennesaw State.
Old Dominion
for like the next 5 years in non-conference play, and he was asked, why are you doing this?
12 of the 16 SEC teams play 3 G5 or an FCS game. 12 of those teams play 36 games, 29 G5 games, and 7 FCS games, and one less conference game. All right? So we figured we'd just adopt SEC scheduling philosophy. You know, some people don't like it. I'm more focused in on those 9 conference games. You know, not only do we want to play 9 conference games, okay, and have the 4-4 championship, the playoff format, okay, we want to have play-in games to decide who plays in those playoffs. You know, championship weekend, let's play 3-6 and 4-5. You want to decide that on the field, make sure everybody's strength of schedule is what it needs to be. Let's make everybody play 9 conference games, and on championship weekend, 3 will play 6, 4 will play 5. And there's still room for another at-large in that format.
I think college football, I think everybody could probably agree that they've lost the plot.
Yes, I would say so.
And I'm not even saying I agree with it, but he's not wrong in the...
No.
They're really... He's especially, because he's at Indiana... He doesn't get a benefit the way that LSU might. Brian Kelly could lose to Clemson in the opening weekend, and they could be a 9-3 team, and everybody's going to prop them up and say, well, they should be in the playoff, and we'll say, well, they lost to Clemson. That should matter. And they're going to say, well, you're going to punish us for playing a tough game.
Yep.
Indiana doesn't get that kind of benefit. Indiana being 9-3 isn't in the conversation the way an LSU is. So to kind of his point of, there really is no real reward for playing a really hard non-conference game. I think it's bad for the fans.
Yeah.
I think it's terrible for the sport. I think everybody should be playing tough, fun non-conference games, and that's what would make the sport better. But to his point, only 3 SEC teams play 10 Power 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
3. If you're at Indiana, he's not wrong. There is no benefit to it, so why not give yourself 3 easy wins as your start and your runway?
I don't disagree with the philosophy at all, and I loved what he said at the end of the clip, and I think that's the model that I would love to get behind and would love to see, not just because the commissioner of the Big Ten is saying it, but I genuinely believe it would be the best for the sport. I just hate what it represents. And he's not the only one that's doing this, and he's not the first guy that's trying to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the race to the bottom. I hate the race to make it as easy as possible. And I think the biggest loser in all of this is
us.
The fans.
Yeah,
the biggest loser in all of this mentality of why would I not do this? Why would I play somebody with the pulse? They backed out of a game with Virginia. When was the last time Virginia football was good? Like this wasn't an opening game against Georgia in Atlanta as a neutral site game. You're playing Virginia.
Who would do that? Who would play it in Atlanta?
Like, if anybody should have backed out of a non-conference game, it should have been Dan Lanning being like, dude, I'm new here. I got to replace half my roster. I'm not playing that game. I just came from there. They're going to kill us. I know how good they are. That's the toughest part for me in all of this, is that I think we lose as fans because I don't care about those games. I'm not going to watch those games. And then we get to these debates at the end of the year, and Indiana was a prime example of this. Now, their Big Ten schedule is going to be harder this year. So if Indiana goes 11-1, they got to go on the road to Oregon. They got to go on the road to Penn State. Like, if you win one of those games, they're going to have a nice feather in their cap, and we're not going to debate them the same way. But there's just no possible way to fairly compare and debate and discuss teams at the end of the season who play such drastically different schedules. There's not a way to do it, which is why I would love to get into and talk at large today about what Petitti wants and what Cignetti was talking about there, because it takes the power away from this random people in a room deciding who gets to play for a playoff spot. It takes away from this metric. Like, what's the metric that matters the most to you? Is it win-loss record, even though you didn't beat anybody? Is it strength of schedule, even though you lost? There's no right or wrong way to analyze all of this. We're making it up as we go.
Well, Indiana kind of set the bar for that part, right?
We're
against it. We got to go to the other side. But he kind of set the bar for it. Who did Indiana – what was Indiana's best win
last year? Their best win last year was a last-second knockout, drag-out fight against 7-5 Michigan.
Right.
They played one team in the top 25 all year, and it was Ohio State, and they lost by 40 points on the road. They didn't play a power team in non-conference, and all of their Big Ten wins, sans Michigan, came against teams that were ranked like 12th through 18th in the conference.
And we can have a problem with
that. And they were in the playoff. It didn't matter.
They got to the playoff.
They were in the playoff.
And that's all that matters for Cignetti. Yeah. He makes more money. You get
and
a little more NIL.
I hate that. I hate that that's the reality.
All right. 6-3. Is it a great conference record? I love the responses to some of this. We'll get to that. And Dan Lanning is going to be at the podium today. Are we going to have a floating duck? Actually, I don't know where you'd have a floating duck. They're in Vegas.
What's the pyramid hotel there?
The Luxor?
The Luxor. You put something on top of the pyramid? Can they do the sphere? Can't you buy the outside of the sphere?
Oh, the duck is a sphere.
The duck, like a rubber ducky as the sphere would be pretty
cool. That would be the move, right? If anybody's going to do that, it'd be Oregon.
Oregon Marketing Department, give me a call. I got ideas.
No, I think they got better ideas than you.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, it's okay.
If they don't buy the sphere and it's lesser than the sphere, I think I won the day.
Back with more College Football Talk, 105.1 The Fan. You can interact with the 105.1 The Fan on our fan text line at 503-864-6326. In case you don't know, we treat you right before, during, and after the text. Visit us at 1051thefan.com.
Somebody said, I love college football dirt. I also love slightly annoyed with dirt, Brandon Sprague. It's college football season summed up in a nutshell.
You haven't even really annoyed me that much. I tend to agree with a lot of what you're saying. Look, the 6-3 record, you're not wrong to point out, like, who's 6-3 is it? Like, is it this team or is that team? What conference? I totally get that. Somebody said depends on the conference. I kind of disagree to a certain extent. It's not that 6-3 is bad.
No.
Totally good.
There's not many 6-3. I would be hard-pressed to find an example where I'd say that's great. Like,
right.
the chances of that happening are very rare.
He may have had it in the cut, I forget, but he talked a long time yesterday, Petitti, and he's going to always cape up for the conference. It's his job, right? He added the caveat of, and if you trip up in the non-conference.
That's why Big 12 made fun of Iowa, because that was Iowa.
Yeah, like at some point, man, I get it. The Big 10 and the SEC are the darlings, and then it's the Big 12 and the ACC are sorting the next wave out, and then it's the group of fives, right?
Yeah.
But, like, at some point, you're basically telling me a team can be 7-5 or 6-6, and your argument is that it's great?
It's a great record
because
the Big Ten is great.
Like,
no, they should not be, and no, that's not great.
I think some of it's just utter ridiculousness. Yes. That's all I'm saying.
I love that these quotes are happening. Kurt Cignetti has, I can't stand him, but I would love him if he was my head coach. He's one of those guys for me.
His whole, like, we beat
playoff teams last year when he was sitting on the desk before they played Notre Dame. He's like, no, you didn't. You beat anybody all year. But I would love him if he was my head coach because he shoots from the hip and he's honest and he doesn't mind taking shots. And that's great for the sport. These talking points, these fights, these interconference things that are happening, great for our radio show and great for content. I also can't stand the politicking. I am so tired of it. The ACC saying, we're deep. No, you're not. The Big Ten acting like all 18 teams are elite. The SEC pretending as if Mississippi State doesn't exist or Kentucky's been relevant every year. Like, this is why, and it's one of the biggest reasons that I've fallen in love with the model, and I'm glad that the Big Ten is not backing off of it. I hate this debate that has to go on every year. Instead of going into the season and knowing, if I finish in X place in my conference, I'm in the college football playoff. And if I win my play-in game, if I'm fifth or sixth, I just got to beat the third or fourth ranked team to get in there. Like, just having a cut and dry rule of this is what it looks like. This is what I need to do. And if I do it, I'm in the playoff. Not should 11-1 Indiana be in, even though they didn't play anybody all year, over a 10-2 SEC team, but their schedule was harder, but they lost twice. It's like there's so much gray area and there's no right answer to the debate. And I'm tired of it. And I want guardrails and I want standardized scheduling and I want these play-in formats to work because I think it takes away all of this extra nonsense.
I would actually add to what you're saying. I don't know if something annoys me more that I love watching than college football.
Yes, it's stupid.
It's such a, like, the payoff for me, it wins out, right? Which is why I'm so addicted to it and I love it out here.
But, August 30 rolls around and you're going to forget about all this nonsense and you're going to be glued to Texas, Ohio State.
You know what I won't care about when Texas, Ohio State and LSU and Clemson and right. Miami and Notre Dame, Belichick on Monday. Like, yes. You know what I won't care about? Conference depth. You know what I won't care about?
Right.
The playoff format.
Right. I just want to watch my football and enjoy it on Saturdays.
I just want to watch the football. Yes. That's, I mean, ultimately, man, like, I love college football. We love college football here on the station. This is why I'm kind of a bigger NFL guy.
Yeah.
They don't have to deal with this. It's all cut and dry. Now you get into some debate of like, man, the AFC South sucked and Houston benefited. Yeah. That
you happens. Get the sub 500 division winner sure. every now and then, and we debate should that rule be changed.
But like, ultimately, it sorts itself out, and it's about health. I don't think college football is really all that different.
No.
This is when I say they've lost the plot, it's what I'm talking about. This is great fodder, but like, you even bring up the format stuff. Ross Dellinger, great at his job, writes an article. I don't read him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no disrespect meant. Like, he is phenomenal at what he does. According to sources, the percentage financial breakdowns of NIL, I just like, dude, I'm so tired and beaten down with financials, with NCAA lawsuits, with playoff format, what's right. Like, I just constantly hitting me over the head. But when that ball's kicked off, man, that payoff for me, I just, great. I will always love watching the sport, talking about the games. Can you believe this quarterback, how great he was? Hey, man, should we be worried about this situation at this team? That I love.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
A lot of this other noise, like, I'm just, and I feel bad as a show host with you sometimes because you have different interests, mm-hmm. and sometimes your interests are, hey, man, did you see the details of this lawsuit? And I feel bad as a co-host because I'm like, I don't care. Just when do they kick it off? Who's returning?
Right.
How big a year it is for Lincoln Riley or Dan Lanning or whoever, Ryan Day, is he going to beat Michigan? I love that stuff. Some of this other stuff is just like, oh, my Lord, be done with it already.
I roll my eyes at a lot of it, too. And it's one of the reasons why I, again, support the model that the Big Ten is advocating for, because I think it fixes a lot of this stuff. And I know that if it ever got implemented, it would drive people nuts because the Big Ten and the SEC would get four automatic spots and the Big 12 and the ACC would get two. And then you'd have your Notre Dame or your group of five and then one or two at-large spots. Right. And so it would be controversial from the outset. I love the idea of going into a year where I think your sharpening your focus on conference races. You're sharpening your focus on week in and week out. I think you're extending the interest in the season for a lot of fans who are in the mix to be in one of those play-in spots towards the end of the year. And it takes the power away from a committee and the debate and the politicking and the yelling at each other about should Indiana or Alabama or this two-loss team or this three-loss team or this one-loss team. I can't stand that stuff. I just want to watch the football and enjoy it. I love the product. I love college football. And I think having a format that makes the regular season more important, makes scheduling more important, makes teams more willing to play tough non-conference games instead of saying the only thing that matters is an 11-1 next to my name despite how I got there, so some committee member sitting in a ballroom thinks I deserve to be in the college football playoff. I think it would solve a lot of those problems. Not all of them. Most of the stuff I'm 100% with you on. I roll my eyes at it. The lawsuits and the conference realignment, like, I'm over it and I'm tired of it. That's one of the reasons I want to get over the college football playoff committee and their stupid rankings. It doesn't come out until halfway through the year, and then they change their format and why they do it every single week.
Dan Lanning going to be on the podium today. Let's talk a little Oregon Duck football next. Ian Furness is going to join us at 8:30, 93.3 KJR. A lot going on in Seattle. Cal Raleigh having an MVP season. Are they going to pay him? Are they going to make a move?
They already did. And then didn't Cal Raleigh get an extension? I think Cal Raleigh signed an extension already. Long one. Very team-friendly, too.
Yeah, I thought he signed one.
Well, I saw a tweet from Softy that was basically quoting Aaron Brockovich that they should be paying him.
They gave him a six-year, $105 million contract extension.
Great team deal.
That I believe just started this year. I think it just literally started.
It was this year, last season.
Yeah.
We could see if that ages well.
He is not an unrestricted free agent until 2031.
Okay. All right. Well, Softy, I don't know what Softy's talking
about. Softy's an idiot. That's what he's talking about.
Diamondbacks guy's a moron. About bringing old Geno Suarez back, who's tearing it up right now.
He's hitting a lot of dingers down in Arizona.
Not the Diamondback season.
Yeah, but
they're actually alive in the wild card race, though.
Okay, we're not doing this.
You want to talk wild card race?
You just railed against Will Ortner for doing Diamondback stuff. And now you want to talk about the Diamondbacks, Portland Station.
I stand by my take on, I think he had them as sticking it up, or did he have them in the open? That was because he didn't have Scottie Scheffler winning a major championship in an open clip.
Yeah, that was in the open.
Having a Diamondbacks cut on, like, I wouldn't do a Diamondbacks segment over Scottie Scheffler on Monday. I think you're just trying to deflect from your Cal Raleigh mistake there, buddy.
It wasn't my mistake. It was Softy.
You don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Oh, I'm sorry. The guy in Seattle was wrong or having a weird thought.
6 year, $105 million. One of the most team-friendly deals that exists in all of baseball.
If my team signed a great player to a team-friendly deal, I wouldn't be publicly advocating to just randomly give them more money.
No, that's a horrifically bad take.
Husky fan.
Exactly.
Let's get into some. I got a treat question I want to get to coming up at 7:45. We also have a segment, if you're new to the show, called Stat or Story. Be at 9:15. A lot of fun. Dan Lanning's going to take the podium today. He'll be live on the podium at noon. We will air that live during the Firm with Harris and Meringue. But Oregon going into Vegas, very interesting. Year two in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. Year one is undefeated. Beat all the tough teams. Eke out a win in Wisconsin late and celebrate yet an undefeated season.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't end the way they wanted it to end, but it was still a stellar first year, beating Penn State, Ohio State, at Wisconsin, and winning the conference. And everybody was wondering, you going to be able to do it in this conference? Well, year one, they did. Dan Lanning's going to take the podium. We hear what he says about his team this year. There's a lot of uncertainty. I was looking at SP Plus stuff. Now, some of this, I'd love to talk to Conley and say, is there any part of SP Plus that you want to tweak because of the world of college football nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, how do you quantify what Dante Moore is going to be this year?
Well, you can't.
It's a very hard thing to do.
It's an impossibility because you can't even project what he was at UCLA because he had a full year of not playing at Oregon.
And he has a lot more talent around him than he did when he was at UCLA.
And you could argue better coaching. Will Stein's proven to be pretty good. Dan Lanning's been putting guys in good positions. Oregon's getting a lot of kids drafted in the NFL. I looked at SP Plus, though, and one model of Oregon, and you've highlighted this, is the returning talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's the third lowest percentage, I believe, on offense in the conference, and defensively, it's still a decent percentage as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty around Oregon. We had Josh Pate on of Late Kick with Josh Pate. Yesterday, you can catch that podcast at 1051thefan.com. Here was Josh Pate when asked about what is Oregon's season? How do we define success? Okay. Clip.
I don't need to sit here and chew my fingernails to the nubs wondering whether those offensive linemen are going to pan out, wondering whether Dante Moore is going to pan out. Now, you guys are up there, so you know as well as I do, you had a five-star quarterback kind of check in and then check out recently. And I think he checked out because he got a load of Dante Moore and realized it's probably going to be a while before I see the field here. So I don't really doubt a lot of their pieces. I think it comes down to execution in big moments. Now, that trip to Penn State early in the season is not going to be easy. Now, you may win that one and give yourself some breathing room, but I could just as easily see a situation where they lose that one and then have to play back against the wall, sort of wounded animal mode the rest of the year, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world for a team, by the way. You know, they could win the league again this year, be a one seed. They could also do what Ohio State did last year and have a few blemishes along the way, but then peak at the right time and win a national title. They'll be within reach. That's the most important thing to me.
So just give yourself a chance is basically what he is saying.
And it's one of the biggest things that I think is a calling card of an elite program, and this is the year that I feel like solidifies that for Dan Lanning. Like a year ago, we were having the same debate about how do they replace fill in the blank. Bucky Irvin, number one running back, gone. Troy Franklin, number one wide receiver, gone. Half of your starting line, gone. Bo Nix, Heisman finalist at quarterback, gone. Half of your starting defense, gone. And that was the talking point going into the Big Ten, is how is Oregon going to replace all of this? And they went out and they went 13-0. And the season didn't end the way that they wanted to, and that was depressing for Duck fans. But you're still proud of the year that you had, and clearly Lanning has gotten to them to the point as of last year where there's no reloading, there's no rebuilding, there's no swoons. Like, you're going to have some years that might be better than others, but there's no falling off of where you're at because you're recruiting and bringing in talent at such a high level. And now we're doing the same thing. Tez Johnson gone, your top running back, Jordan James gone, Terrence Ferguson at tight end gone, half your offensive line is gone again. Basically, your entire starting defense outside of like three guys is gone. Like, they are replacing so many figures. We don't know when Evan Stewart's going to be back, but when you recruit at such a high level like he has, there's no down years. You're just filling in spots with other blue chip recruits, which is what he's been stockpiling for the last couple of seasons. This year is a bigger question mark because the quarterback is a bigger question mark. Dylan Gabriel was coming in as a known commodity, and that gave you a little bit of hope as a Duck fan. So that, to me, continues to be the biggest question mark. But if Oregon finds their way back into the mix again this year, I think they've officially reached that status where you're just on cruise control and you're going to be in the mix every year, no matter who comes and who goes, because you're recruiting at that high of a level and you're acquiring talent at that high of a level.
So is the I'll ask this then, the cruise control thing, right? Like,
in one of the years, if you're there long enough, this is an example I use in majors in golf. If you give yourself enough chances, to Pate's point, like, eventually you'll do it. Xander Schauffele was this. He's always in the top 10, but he can't win the big one. It's like, yeah, but if you're there in the mix that many times, one round you're going to have a good round, or somebody's going to blow up, or you're going to make a birdie, and eventually it'll break your way. That's the beauty of college football. If you're in the fight every year, Ohio State's been this with Ryan Day. Every year they're in it, didn't win it, can't win it, can't win it, can't. And then last year, all of a sudden, what happens? You win it.
So giving yourself that, you know, are you on cruise control, to your point, is largely like, as long as you're in the mix, that's all you need, right? Whether you're the best team or you're considered the least team, I guess, of the group, being in the mix is in the mix. We've seen wild card teams. We watched Ohio State win the title last year. But, like, what about the years if you don't make it? Or is that expectation erased?
I think in a 12-team playoff era, the goal every year is to make the playoff.
Right, but, like, 9-3, unless, what, Clemson, I think, was a wasn't Clemson a three-loss team last year, and they made it because they won the ACC,
Clemson,
right?
Might have been a four-loss team last year, but I know they for sure at least lost three games.
They were 9-3.
But they won their conference, so they got an automatic bid into the playoff.
So they beat the SMU in the ACC title game on the field goal. The 9-3 season, though, and I can't speak to the future models of that stuff. That'll work itself out.
Yeah, is that good enough to get in
but
this
like
year?
But like 9-3 this year, I doubt gets you in, right?
I mean, probably not, but you never know. We debated 9-3 teams last year. Alabama was in the debate at the end of the season. South Carolina was in the debate at the end of the season. So it was a legitimate debate. So, how does the rest of sport look? It's hard to answer.
I know injuries play a part.
They were 9-3 last year, by the way.
Thank you. I know injuries do play a part in football. We all are aware of that. If injuries don't happen, though, and you're 9-3 and don't make the playoff, what is the thought? I'm just curious.
I mean, I would say it's a slightly disappointing season, for sure. I also don't think that's falling off of a cliff. I think 9-3 being your low watermark is a hell of a spot for the program to be in. I think what I'm talking about with cruise control is we're going through the same debate and talking points this offseason that we did last year. All I heard last offseason was, how are you going to replace Jackson Paris Johnson and Bucky Irving and all the names that they lost to the NFL? 2 years ago, Oregon set a program record sending guys into the National Football League, and they followed it up after asking, how do they replace all that? Right. By going 13-0. And so I'm just saying, if they do it again this year, that's my large... I'm not arguing that Oregon's there. I think they're going to have a very good year this year. But again, quarterback play is a major wild card for them. If they do it again this year, let's say they go 10-2, slight trip up at Penn State.
You're not as concerned about the replacements.
Like, to me,
right?
It's just like, this is every, we got to stop
plug
doing this. We do this with Georgia and Bama every year. They lost 10 guys in the NFL. What are they next year? They're great because they replace them with 5-star recruits. Mm. And Oregon has acquired talent at a higher level in the last handful of years than they ever had in the history of the program. So that's my larger point of cruise control. If they do, if they go 10-2 or 11-1 this year, hell, if they win the Big Ten this year, after all that they lost with the question marks at quarterback, I hope we get to a point next offseason where it's like, man, but how are they going to replace Evan Stewart? Kenyon Sadiq's going to the NFL. How are they going to replace him? Like, yeah, do we do this every year? And they find a way to replace those guys.
We'll see what Dan Lanning has to say at the podium today at Big Ten Media Day, day two. It rolls on. Ian Furness at 8:30 for the Daily Ticker. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Radio Network. We're back into some NFL stuff. I just saw a highlight of Anthony Richardson throw a 12-yard slant, and he overthrew him.
Dude's dialed. He's ready. It's day one. Give him time, okay?
Like 10 yards above the receivers.
I actually just sent, because I just saw it in one of the breaks. We'll get to it at some point in the final hour. Their GM had an interesting comparison.
I saw
for their
that
young
too.
Quarterback.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if that's the same.
Yeah, I don't know if it is either. But he's also not wrong, because we would have said similar things about those other guys.
Ian Furness once proclaimed on these airwaves that Geno Smith is just as good as Brock Purdy, which, you know, some people were like, I could see it. And other people were like, no.
Nope.
I'm curious if he feels that way about Sam Darnold.
And does he still feel that way about Geno Smith now that he's no longer in Seattle?
Wouldn't it be funny if he's like, well, actually, guys.
Nah, that guy's a bum. Get him out of here. He sucks.
Nah, he's a good friend of the program. He'll join us at 8:30 for the Daily Ticker. I'm curious to, I hear what you're saying about Oregon.
Yeah.
I don't even disagree with kind of your overall point. The only slight difference would be, yeah, we did wonder, is this guy going to, like, is Dylan Gabriel going to be as good as Bo Nix? We knew Dylan Gabriel was a good quarterback.
Yes,
we just didn't know to what level he would be.
He was a proven commodity coming into starting a quarterback.
Jordan James, Bucky Irving. Yeah, Bucky got drafted. He had a nice rookie season. We knew Jordan James was a beast.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like this year, a little different than that year, where you kind of had some more certainty. Like, we knew Ferguson was going to break records. Tez was at wide receiver. There were just some more sure things that we had known or more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one's like, all right, we saw a little bit of this guy. What is he going to be?
Yeah.
And so slightly different. But to your point, if they have a good season, they're 10-2 or better, make a playoff, probably going to be in a position where we wonder it. But we're not like, I think they're going to take a big step back.
Pull your hair out every offseason of how do you replace X, Y, and Z. And I think that's why recruiting and the transfer portal are so important, man. You got to acquire talent.
We're going to get to the final hour on time, but I want to ask you something I saw on social media, which could be dangerous. I don't partake in challenge as much.
Mm.
The last thing of this I would say I did was when you and I on the air tried the Popeye's spicy fried chicken sandwich.
We did. We tried. Yeah, we ate those live on the air.
A friend of the program, Kyle Knepper, who once worked with us at Odyssey, went and got those and brought them to us.
They were phenomenal.
Like, lights out.
They're just life-changing.
Mike Golic Jr. does something similar to this.
Like a food challenge?
Not a challenge. It's
okay.
More like, I'm going to test something.
Let's try it, and then we'll react and give you my thoughts on
I'll
it.
Rate it, grade it, whatever.
Yep.
Yesterday, he tried something I wasn't even aware that existed, and I don't really partake in eating a lot of awful food for you, but I will dabble. He tried the Pop-Tart ice cream sandwich. His review basically says it's the best one.
Can I give you a hot take?
And he did the brown sugar maple because he says that's the best Pop-Tart.
So he thought that was the best. Now this takes the cake is the best Pop-Tart?
Well, he says it's already the best Pop-Tart in general.
Okay.
It's better than strawberry and raspberry,
right.
Blueberry.
Right.
But of ice cream sandwiches, he chose that one. He says that's the best ice cream sandwich.
Can I give you a hot take that might make people look at me and call me an idiot? But I do that every day, so why not continue? I think Pop-Tarts are disgusting.
Like, you've always thought that?
Always thought that. I have eaten maybe two Pop-Tarts in my entire life, and both times I took a bite of them, I thought, no, thank you. I never want anything to do with this again.
How old? Do you remember how old you were?
Relatively like young eight, kid. Nine, like just old? A normal kid that should like every sort of sugary breakfast item possible, and I did not like it. I tried it non-toasted and toasted. I tried it both ways. Let's see if one way is better than the other. I don't kink shame, so whichever way is going to make me happy, I'm going that route, and neither way made me happy.
Dude.
I'm anti-Pop-Tart, and I know that's probably a really bad take for a lot of people, but this is one of my swag food items where he's like, I don't eat strawberries. If you give me a Pop-Tart for this food challenge, I wouldn't want to eat it.
I used to raw dog Pop-Tarts religiously. I just unwrap and eat.
It's a sugary breakfast for a kid. I should love it. I'm the one that's at fault here,
yeah.
Not the Pop-Tart. This is a me problem.
I actually tend to agree with Golic Jr. here. I do love a lot of the Pop-Tart flavors. Mm-hmm. Strawberry, obviously. I kind of liked the brown sugar maple one the most.
Yeah.
Are you a Pop-Tart guy, Swag?
I'm not anti-Pop-Tart. I don't seek them out.
We don't eat them anymore, of course.
Sure.
But at a younger age... Yeah. Oh my God.
Pounding those things, baby.
I wouldn't breathe. Where'd they both
go? I wouldn't refuse one in a challenge.
If somebody gave you a Pop-Tart right now, handed it to you, you'd eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be mad at it. I love a Pop-Tart.
Strawberry.
And yeah.
You don't even like strawberry flavoring? God, that's the weirdest thing. I don't know whose take is worse here. Your anti-strawberry flavoring,
buddy.
Or you just not liking Pop-Tarts at all?
I think mine's probably worse here.
That's shocking.
It's a sugary breakfast.
Shocking.
I got problems, man.
If people looked at you, shocking.
Wouldn't see it at all.
Not at all.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
A lot to get to in the 8 o'clock hour here. Ian Furness is going to join us at 8:30 for the Daily Ticker. We'll talk some NFL next third hour. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.